Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Hello and welcome to Handy Link, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that promotes recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities. For more information, visit ICHA.ca. I'm your host, Cam Wells. The first segment of our show, we're going to hear from Sukaina Dada from York University. So tell me a little bit about some of the ableism faced by Muslim families who have children with disabilities. I know your research has covered this.
Yes, so I think it's twofold. I think Muslim families with children with disabilities face it both from the Muslim communities, their respective Muslim communities, as well as non-Muslim communities. And I'll explain that a little bit further, if that's okay. First of all, within Muslim communities, many of them in Canada are not accessible, and many of them, to a great extent, are not inclusive. And I think that is primarily because, you know, it's just, like in many other instances, disability is just not on the agenda. Inclusivity, accessibility has just not made it to the forefront of the agenda. And so when, I think now, especially with the AODA, goals that we have in Canada, I think now accessibility is becoming more and more on the agenda, but primarily for physical access. So what happens is Muslim families with children with disabilities are largely left out of events and schools and other types of teaching.
So, do you find there's this presumption that says, doesn't affect us directly, so we're not going to worry about it, sort of thing?
Yes, exactly. And it's the argument of numbers, right? So, you know, it might affect one or two people, but, you know, it's not really affecting entire congregations. And, you know, it's a catch-22, because people often don't go to events that are not inclusive. It doesn't mean that they don't want to go. It's that they can't go. And on the flip side, what happens is people see, well, you know, there's nobody who really needs the need, and therefore we're not going to have, you know, American Sign Language because it's not required, because nobody needs it. And I think more and more now, Muslim leaders in Ontario especially are overcoming that, that ableist sort of idea or notion. But it's slow steps. I will give you an example. There is a Islamic center in Toronto called the Jaffrey Islamic Center. And now for all of their major programming, they have sign language interpreting. And that's just a small example of how they're making their program more inclusive. But I think for the most part, as a community or as Muslim communities, we really need to overcome this ableist idea that, you know, communication's only happening in one way, or that it's just not an issue for everyone.
So If you could send any one message about why it matters, why we need to make communication and facilities accessible as much as we can, what would you say about that?
I mean, if I'm talking to people from Muslim communities, and I say communities because it's not just a one specific group, I would say, you know, the premise of the faith, the very foundation of the faith, is to be inclusive. And I think we understand that because, like, as a Muslim individual, you know, our community is very largely marginalized. And so this idea that you're isolated and excluded and, you know, often, you know, you often face stigma or you often face discrimination for being different to some extent, I think we can resonate with that. And I think we can further resonate with the idea that, you know, we are in a society where we might not look the same as everyone, or we might not speak the same language. Similarly, we might understand, you know, or further reach out to people who have different abilities and maybe different modes of communication and different ways of moving and talking and interacting. And so I think, you know, we just have to take a step back and really see what, you know, what would it take to be more inclusive? Because there's a myth that it'll take a lot of money and it'll take a lot of hard work. And I don't believe that to be true at all. It's really a matter of breaking down ableism and just seeing that we, you know, there are different ways to include people and to make people feel welcome and to really truthfully make places physically and socially accessible. And we just have to figure out those ways. And the best way to figure out those ways is to talk to people with different needs. So talking to people who use wheelchairs or talking to people who are deaf or hard of hearing and communicating with them and seeing what is it that they need. And I think the conclusion would be that we can come up with a ton of ways.
So with this whole comorbidity of coming in from a different culture, people might hesitate, and having different abilities, as you said, they might also hesitate there to reach out. How do we break that down? How do we overcome it?
I mean, I think just looking at it from the perspective of we all have you know, differences and we all have rights. And I think that, you know, looking at it from that perspective, saying that I have a right, you have a right, we all have rights to be here, we all have rights to engage, we all have rights to worship, we all have rights to do everything. And I think when we take it from that perspective, you know, we will break that hesitation. Because I too want to, you know, have all my rights upheld. You know, whether it's accessing education or employment or even being able to go to a church or a mosque, that is my right. And, you know, I think we then start to break down this idea that I have more rights if I'm able-bodied, you know, or I have more rights if I'm from a particular culture or I speak a particular language. You know, this notion that we all are in it together, I think we need to talk about that a little bit more. And vocalize that and bring this different perspective out into the forefront. Because I think once we do, then those conversations, I started off this interview by saying, you know, I think it's just not on the agenda. I think in order to make disability on the agenda and have it at the forefront of conversations, I think we need to just talk about it from a rights perspective.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great. This next segment of our show, I'll be chatting with David Lipofsky, who will be telling us a little bit about budgetary promises made to the disability community. So tell me a little bit about the recent happenings with the AODA, including the recent budget meeting.
Well, there are two major developments, one of which is the budget came out at the end of March. And there are a number of things in there that will, of course, be of interest to people with disabilities, raising social assistance rates, including for the Ontario Disability Support Program, more funding for students with special education needs, which is long overdue, more funding for mental health services. And those are all really important. Our major concerns are two. Number one, Ontario is not now on schedule for full accessibility for 2025. The deadline that the Accessibility for Ontarians with Disabilities Act requires the government to lead us to. And there's nothing in this budget dedicated to getting us there or a plan to get us there. So that's problem number one. Problem number two, there are a number of new spending initiatives in the budget for the public generally. Excuse me, I've got the bad cold. But there is nothing attached to them to make sure that those new initiatives will be inclusive and accessible to people with disabilities. So, for example, there's money for announced money for school construction, university building construction, but nothing attached to it saying, hey, this time we're going to make sure it's actually public money isn't used. They are fully accessible. And our coalition has pointed out significant situations where there have been screw-ups with this. There's funding for more child care placements. And you know, obviously that's great for families, but nothing announced to say, but our money will only go to do child care placements, which are accessible to kids with disabilities and parents with disabilities. And without those kind of strings attached that are effective and enforceable, we know from past practices that screw-ups will happen. So that's those are the concerns about the budget. The second major development is, as everyone knows, there's an election coming up on June 7th in Ontario. Our coalition is strictly nonpartisan. We don't support or oppose any candidate or any party or any leader. What we have done in every election since 1995, either our coalition or our predecessor coalition, is that we write all the major parties and ask them for election commitments, detailed election commitments on disability and accessibility. And we list the commitments we need and explain them. And we asked, we sent such a letter to the leaders of the major parties on April 3rd. And we've asked them to answer by April 30th, and we will make public their responses. And what we do leading into the elections, we make public their responses, we explain the differences between them. We of course don't tell people how to vote. That's none of our business. But we work in to try to get the strongest commitments from all the parties, and to let voters know what the party's positions are. And in every election, 1985, any election platforms or promises on accessibility for people with disabilities have been made in letters to our coalition or our predecessor. So we're doing that again. And if people go to our website, which is www.aodaalliance.org, you go to our What's New page, you will see posted there the actual text of the letter and the detailed commitments we seek.
So what sorts of responses do you anticipate? Do you think these parties will make it a priority or just another constituents?
Well, we that's going to depend on our advocacy efforts. We're reaching out to all the parties to say, hey, we're happy to brief you on this stuff and to provide any information you need. And our letter itself provides hyperlinks to useful background information. And we have had relationships with the parties for years, so they knew this was coming. This isn't news. In every election since 1995, at least two of the major parties have made commitments to us. It's varied which two they are. And in at least one case, all three parties did. But at least two have in each election. The other thing that will make a difference is we are encouraging your listeners to go check out our letter. And whatever be your political stripe, contact the candidates in your riding. Or if you're connected to a party, contact the party you like. Send them our letter and say, hey, please make these commitments. because the more they hear, not just from us, but from you, the more likely they will be ready to make commitments. The other two things I'm encouraging your listeners to do are these. Follow us on Twitter and get our email updates. I'm going to give you the information on how to do that in a sec, so get ready to write something down. We will be putting out action tips via email and Twitter on how people can raise disability issues in the election. We will be putting out updates on what the parties have had to say to us and any developments that have come up. If we find out about any inaccessible all candidates debates, we will be letting people know about it. So you plug in with us, you can get up-to-the-minute news on this. And because the mainstream media often doesn't cover these issues very much, we may be the major way to find out. So how do you plug in? To get our email updates, just write the following email address, aodafeedback@gmail.com. I'll repeat that, aodafeedback@gmail.com. And all you got to say is sign me up, and then we'll get you on our email update list. And the second thing to do is follow us on Twitter. Our Twitter handle is @AODAAlliance, @AODAAlliance. If you're more of a Facebook fan than a Twitter fan, go to Facebook and you can like our page. It's just called Accessibility for Ontarians with Disabilities Act Alliance. Accessibility for Ontarians with Disabilities Act Alliance. And either way, you will find out what we have to say. You can pass it on to your friends or retweet it to your followers. And that's a way to get the breaking news from us on what's going on.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
All right, and I always appreciate your covering our issues. Really, it's a great thing that your program does.
My pleasure. HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Are you a new or returning student at the university? Looking for a creative outlet that incorporates music and fun? Why not volunteer at CJAM FM? Volunteering isn't hard. All you need are a pair of headphones and the enthusiasm to learn. So grab some friends and email programcjam@gmail.com or come on down to the station. We're located in the basement of the CAW Student Center on the UWIN campus. And tune into CJAM anytime on the UWindsor app or online at www.cjam.ca.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that promotes social and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex County. Earlier in our show, we heard from Sukaina Dada from York University and David Lepofsky from the AODA Alliance. In this segment of our show, we'll hear from Neil Boulanger, be telling us a little bit about disability issues among Aboriginal peoples. So tell me a little bit about some of the issues facing Aboriginal people with disabilities.
So Indigenous persons living with disability in Canada experience a rate of disability at about half that of the non-Indigenous population. And as well as that, we face some unique challenges such as discrimination for being Indigenous, as well as the stereotypes and marginalizations for living with disabilities. So, you know, many of our communities, many of our people, you know, experience the same barriers that any person living with a disability experience, such as accessibility issues, you know, limited employment, difficulty accessing necessary disability and health-related services, and poverty, big issues that we're dealing with today.
So, how do you go about overcoming these ableist presumptions?
Well, it takes a collective effort. It takes, collaborating with different levels of the government, you know, provincial, federal, Indigenous, you know, municipalities, different service organizations to come together, put aside our specific mandates, and stop looking at the cost rather than the solutions. And starting putting some plans in place, such as, you know, for lack of a better term, basic living wage. You know, everybody should have the opportunity to raise the persons with disabilities assistance that's currently in place. Make sure there is housing stock that is available to everyone, and start working more effectively with employers to highlight the opportunities that they're missing out on. Things like that, and there's much, much more that we have to do. But it really takes a collaborative effort, and we have to start working better together.
So, are there any myths surrounding the idea of Aboriginal peoples with disabilities? Anything the public should be better informed on?
Well, I think the myths that that are subjected to, you know, Indigenous persons living with a disability are not dissimilar to anyone living with a disability. That, you know, it could be more expensive if you were to give them an opportunity to work in your organization. You have to modify everything. You know, it's going to be more of a hassle. You know, the sick time is going to go up. All those common things that we hear just about disability in general. But also when we're considering Indigenous people, you know, there's the myth of, you know, drug and alcohol abuse. Everybody's, you know, using, you know, why should we hire them? They get everything for free. These kinds of things are still very predominant out in the world. And, you know, it has to be looked at, and people need to be better informed.
So if you could send any one message challenging those preconceptions, what would you say?
I'd say start being more curious about the Indigenous population of Canada. And they are Canada. You know, there's 623 First Nations across Canada, 53 Inuit communities, numerous chartered Métis communities. People need to be curious. They have to reach out. These are our neighbors. These are our brothers, our sisters. That's who we are. And rather than operating from a position of, you know, hearsay, operate from a position of knowledge, reach out, attend some events, understand who we are as people and what we do.
So, have you seen society making any progress in this sense? Has there been any success?
I think so. I think there's step forwards, but then there's steps backs, right? So we've done a lot of work at BCANS over the years, and you know, we've had the opportunity now to introduce new programs specific for Indigenous persons and families living with disabilities to help them. For example, with the Registered Disability Savings Plan, we're involved with the federal accessibility legislation, looking at some of the barriers within Canada's First Nations, both physically, you know, accessibility policy-wise, those type of things, to identify the problems and start working with the government to start address them. So those are positive steps forward as well. We had the opportunity last year around this time to go to Geneva and present to the United Nations about Indigenous disability. And many of the recommendations that we put forward to the CRPD committee were made to Canada to address. So we see forward moving that way. We see awareness coming more, you know, specific to the Indigenous disability sector, and that's a good thing. Every you know, awareness and bringing more light to some of the difficulties that our sector faces is a good thing. But still, Canada is often an unfriendly place to live if you're an Indigenous person, and we see that in the news all the time. We see actions, we see comments that are blatantly posted. So we've got a lot of work to do.
So in terms of the barriers you have broken down, what stands out the most in regards to what you've presented for the work going forward?
Well, I think we've seen both provincially and federally a better reach out from government to the disability sector, you know, and of course we're part of that as an Indigenous disability organization. So I'm heartened by that. We've been involved over the last year and a half with many consultations with the federal and provincial governments. We've been appointed to a number of key committees to make sure that the priorities of our people are known, of our communities are known, and that they're acted upon by government. So I think that's a good thing. Years ago, we were always the ands, you know, oh, and the Indigenous, it's like, and persons living with disabilities. Now we've moved up where, you know, they're coming to us, you know, first, and that's a good thing.
So what are the next steps for BCANS?
Well, we're going to continue to work on what we do. You know, we have about 7,000 client files that we work on. We're going to continue to expand our programs based upon the needs that are identified by our communities and our clients. We're going to continue to work with governments to make positive change for all persons living with a disability across Canada. so we can see a better day. There's a lot of work that we have to do. We're still going to collaborate with other organizations, and we're going to look for other organizations to collaborate with us.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
You bet. Thanks, Cam.
Of course. My friends, the only true equalizer in life is our humanity. Some might argue it's money or prestige or power, but the truth is, when it comes to disabilities, they don't discriminate. They don't look at a person and say, oh, we like this class of person, so we're not going to affect them. Oh, we don't like this group, so let's go out and target. Fact is, disabilities affect everyone. It's a universal phenomenon. Whether you yourself have been affected, or you think it's never struck in your family, it has. Statistically, it's affected every family, because it's a part of life. Regardless of any outdated perceptions or any myths to the contrary, disability is neither a hopeless cause nor a curse. We are simply a part of the great tapestry of life. And when it comes to disinformation out there, it's a slippery slope. You can start off, one person knows a person with a disability who was affected this way, and then they go on to tell somebody else who tells somebody else. Before you know it, you have a third-hand report that may or may not be true of the general disability population. Get to know such people. Get to understand their stories. This is especially important for those in power. They should recognize that we are, in fact, a significant part of the constituents. Even if these leaders are given the keys to the kingdom, they need to understand the nature of the lock. What I mean by that is, they can't build their base of power on one set of ideals alone. They can't just say, we're going to appeal to this group because it's popular and it's what happens to be the flavor of the month. No. These are real people with real life stories that day to day need to be taken into consideration. I maintain it's true of all minority groups out there. But the question to me is, are people with disabilities really a minority? If you look at all the different factors, all the different ways a person can be affected, I would say no. There's no person who hasn't been touched or affected in some way. There's no reason to go out of our way to exclude anybody. People of different cultures, people who historically we haven't had the best relationship with, people who just want to come into this country to work, to live, to have their rights respected. And who is anyone to say we're not going to do that? What's coming up with the elections? Let's hope it's not old boss, same as the new boss territory. Promises are easy to make when you're trying to win somebody's favor. They're not so easy to keep when the pressure is really on. But I believe it can be done. And I believe people can see beyond their own needs to recognize that people with disabilities are not only capable, but they need to be included to express those capabilities. If you're someone with a story of disability life, write HandyLink4, HandyLink, and the numeral 4, gmail.com. Always love to hear from you folks. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you, no matter who we are or where we come from, we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.